There you go. Welcome to WWNYLXS Radio, brought to you from the great borough of Brooklyn, New York. We are here today to give you information about the activities of WWNYLXS, which is the New York GNU Linux scenes, including our most recent activities, of which we're going to have a hot damn fine one coming to you this coming month. In March 17th, we're going to be taking a little bit of a field trip down to Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia. I don't know why it's called the District of Columbia, since that this is America and not Columbia. But nevertheless, that's what it's called. And we're going to be visiting our good old friends at George Washington University, like Tony Stanko and Bruce Perens, and we're going to be explaining to them in our Revolutionary War garb, like founding fathers, why it is that it's not in our best interest to have Microsoft be given a free ride at what's supposed to be an open source and or free software advocacy program. Before we do this, let me like to introduce you to my guest, David Williams. David Williams, we met David when we were in the middle of a rather fat flame war, you might say, across, let's see, about 15 mailing lists with a lot of reporters listening in as to why it is that it's not a good idea to have Microsoft at George Washington University's eGov-OS conference on free software. I will give you a little bit back on him. I just want to say a couple of things about Dave. Dave, besides being one of these guys that can write like 50,000 paragraphs coherently in 30 seconds and then which makes him really good to have on your side in a flame war. He's very bright and articulate. He's come from the Virginia area, and I think you're going to enjoy his presence on tonight's radio show. But before we go on, let me just cover a couple of things about NYLX in general, in case you guys don't know what NYLXS is. NYLXS stands for the New York GNU Linux Scene. We are not a lug. We are an organization that's dedicated to the education of free software in the public's eye and the promotion of free software in general. We support all the other lugs and activities dealing with free software in New York in a variety of ways. We have our outstanding, and it really is just outstanding, Free Software Institute, which is the educational program. It is cheap and it is effective. We get a lot of new students through it every single month, and I would like to plug it right now. We just got done with our Perl 1 program, our GNU Linux Class 1 installation program, and our Unix 1 program, and everybody's come the way basically smiling and happy. And our GNU Linux class, after they get done compiling their kernels for the first time and breaking in their new operating systems with their new computers, is going to be holding its install fest on the 16th of March, in which all these people newly armed with their new knowledge is going to be let loose on the world and try to install all of your funny configurations by ad-libbing off of their knowledge base. Now, the last few times that we've done this, this was good. They were actually, their effectiveness was beyond my expectations. They really learned the material well. They know how to do installations. They were able to tackle very difficult and tough software with a minimal amount of oversight by me, and I was very impressed.
I got a challenge for
them. Well, yes.
I guess you should bring that little laptop over.
Sure, sure. Bring your laptops over. In any event, it's going to be in Brooklyn this time. In fact, it's going to be in our offices where this radio show is coming from. And this will be on that Sunday night, and it's going to be followed up by our radio show. And if we're lucky, maybe a few people from the class will still be here, and we can have a group party on the radio show, which should be somewhat fun. In addition to that, the Free Software Chamber of Commerce is up and kicking. The Free Software Chamber of Commerce is a business network of GNU Linux and free software consultants, including the likes of Big Iron people, like, well, not Big Iron, but they are very advanced services providers, including people like David Sugar, Tim Wilcox, Bill Putney, myself, Marco Scoffier, Pete Siegel, and Joe Mafia, and other people, Evan Inker. And we're going to be extending that so that not only are we going to be doing our normal Tuesday weekly meetings at 12 o'clock at Rosenzweig and Mafia's at 845 3rd Avenue in Manhattan, but we're also going to be doing probably a biweekly or maybe a monthly evening meeting for the FSCC for those who can't make it at the lunchtime meeting. Also in Midtown, which is currently being negotiated with one of our board members, Evan Inker, at his wonderful place of business over at a place called GAM. I'd like to thank everybody who's been involved. I'll tell you a little bit about David. In addition to him being a pretty good advocate about free software and on the ball about what's politically astute with free software, he was also taking on the responsibility of leading our election committee, which means that he's going to be basically responsible for providing to make sure that elections are clean and fair. And ultimately, actually, they don't know this yet, I haven't said it to them, but they're going to be the ultimate deciding factor in all disputes as to who was elected to what. So this is it was nice of him to pick this up, considering that we met him only about 2 weeks ago, and we're pretty happy about that, along with the other members.
To know that that's what I'm doing.
Oh, yes. You have the whole organization in your hands for a brief moment
I
in time.
Idea.
I would like to also tell everybody that in addition to the Install Fest and the regular classes that we're having with the FSI, you should not forget that we have done reasonable work in the last week working with several Brooklyn-based community boards for education. And particularly our educational committee or subcommittee is working on trying to bring a free software curriculum into the educational system, which is a rather unique thing. And we've had a lot of help with that from Charles Nardino and from Celso, whose last name I don't know off the top of my head. He's just a great Celso.
Celso de Sousa?
Celso de Salvia.
Something Portuguese.
That's it. Yes, he's not from Portugal,
Brazil?
But he's from Brazil.
Ah.
Right. And that's also be happening, or is happening. And we have many other activities. We're going to be starting our advanced TCP/IP networking workshop, which will be starting on Sundays after we come back from Washington and going into the following year. We've had a number of people that have been interested in that, people who have come from classes and people who have been in previous classes and other people who have been from other organizations. And we're going to be looking at doing that on Sundays. So look forward to announcements on our advanced TCP/IP workshop, which is really going to be conducted like a college course with an excellent book by somebody by the name of Coomer. For more information about that, look at the www.nylxs.com mailing list. We have two of them. One is Hangout, which is our general place where we raucously argue and disagree about everything under the sun, particularly lately. And then we have the NYLXS-announce list, which is where you get most of our announcements. And I try to spread them around to other places and locations. Outside of that, I'd like to say hello to all my friends out there, especially Jay Sulzberg and Brett Winkoop. And outside of that, we will now turn this over to our conversation about the main topic of today, which is our trip to Washington, D.C., and eGovOS. And before I go any further, I'd like to just ask David if he would take a moment to explain what his views are of what the conditions of eGovOS is, and why it is that we have to go down to Washington, D.C. dressed as colonials and founding fathers to explain to the public why this is not such a great thing for free software.
I guess a little background is probably in order. I mean, this initially came to my attention because of David Sugar. He was commenting on it and how he was surprised when he looked up information about the conference to see that there were two additions to the lineup. One was a fellow by the name of Jason Matusaw, who is the spokesperson for Microsoft's Shared Source Initiative. And the other is a presentation by the, I think they call themselves the Institute for Software Choice. And he brought it up that he was surprised to see them, and he himself was planning on being in the Czech Republic at the time, but was just as happy that was the case, because if they were going to be there, he wasn't sure he wanted to. By way of clarification, the Software Choice people are a group that was put together in response to initiatives by some of the open source people as well as I'm not sure if anyone was directly involved with it in Free Software Foundation, but to try to get government and public agencies to use open source and free software. Some people go to the point of view of mandating it, that it should be required if you are a government agency that's accountable to the people in some kind of a democratic organization or democratic society, then as with documentation, as with records, you should also be open in the systems that you use. The source code should be provided for all of your systems and should be available for public audit under the Freedom of Information Act or something similar. Other people are kind of middle of the road about it. They think that it should be included. If a contract is coming up to put together a new system for a public agency, one of the choices has to be free software. Not necessarily mandated, but included. Either way, the Institute for Software Choice is a cleverly named group that's position is basically that there should be no mandate of open source software, that there should be no pressure on any government or public agency to use open source software. In fact, they're sponsored by Microsoft and a few other companies that are satellite companies of Microsoft, I guess you could say. And the whole idea is, in fact, they are opposed to open source being a requirement even in, just for consideration. So their unspoken goal, although it has come out occasionally in the media, is that they want open source to be removed from the table entirely. The Shared Source Initiative is something very specifically produced by Microsoft, as opposed to being done through a front organization like this Software Choice Group. The Shared Source Initiative is being sold as a small step, or probably a large step in their minds, towards reconciling the open source methodology with Microsoft's proprietary approach to developing software. What they're saying is, okay, there's something to this open source thing. Here's what we'll do. We'll allow you to view the source code to software that we're going to make available to you. So far, it's been offered exclusively to government organizations and academic institutions. It's not available for public consumption by any means.
There's nothing new about that, though.
Right. And
the client has been big enough to hand out money, they're always allowed to see the source code.
Yeah, that's
which
certainly true.
Which didn't give them right to change the source code.
Right, and it's still not the case. If they sign a number of really restrictive non-disclosure agreements, representatives of, for example, a government are allowed to look at source code to very specific applications or interfaces or protocols, not necessarily entire system that they're purchasing, and they are not allowed to change it on top of everything else. The real reason for this, among others, is international clients, such as, for example, the government of the Russian Republic, are concerned that when they buy software from an extranational company like Microsoft, that it might have backdoors in it, it might have software that they don't know about and that might, you know, jeopardize their national security. So Microsoft really doesn't have any choice but to make their source code available to some degree, because otherwise they risk losing these very large clients. However, as a clever business opportunity, they realize that, well, we've got to do this. Why don't we make it look like we're doing it out of the goodness of our own heart? We're doing it to meet these open source people halfway and show them that we're good sports. So the basic structure of the open source shared source initiative is to make some source code of some interfaces and some applications available to some institutions under very restrictive terms, and to get out there and get the message that they're doing something open source like. So that's the background of the situation. These two people all of a sudden appeared on the roster for the eGovOS conference. The eGovOS conference is being put together by a group called the Cyber Policy Security Initiative. I can't even remember the full name, but it's a policy institute that's working through George Washington University and being chaired by a fellow by the name of Tony Stanko. Apparently, from what I've come to understand, Mr. Stanko was a lawyer who worked for the SEC, I guess, at one time. And
that's the Security Exchange Commission. I don't know what they have anything to do with free software. But
right, and from there,
a lot of free software.
Fair enough. He went to, I guess at some point he decided to, for a career change, and decided to get involved with the free software movement, and Ruben would be more familiar about his work with the FSF, but from what I understand, it didn't pan out. If I understand correctly, he was trying to compromise on some of the fundamental issues of FSF, like the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or no, Digital Rights Management. His approach was that being somebody from D.C., accustomed to the way things are done in the halls of power, where if you feel like you'll get something 2 years down the road, you make a deal to partially sell out your principles now, he felt like you could bring that kind of compromise to some fundamental issues that the FSF was behind. He felt like, well, if the manufacturers of DRM-enabled hardware would compromise and allow GNU Linux or GNU-based operating systems to boot from their DRM systems, then that would be okay. Not, you know, appreciating the idea that DRM is theft, that it essentially should not exist at all. He was he didn't really get it, and his time as an advocate for free software apparently didn't work out. So he went to a new angle. He started working with the Open Source Initiative. My understanding of the OSI is that it was put together by Bruce Perens, as well as a bunch of other people, Michael Tiemann of Red Hat, a few other people, basically as a kind of wider umbrella group for open source software that did not necessarily require free software or the new GPL. The BSD licenses, MIT licenses, all sorts of licenses, as long as they involved including the source code, making the source code available with the applications, qualify as open source. And from what I understand, or from what I've seen, it's sort of a compromise in a way. It's kind of a way to represent open source such that it doesn't intimidate the business community, that it doesn't intimidate people who are afraid of, you know, losing what they make or not having any, you know, proprietary rights. So it's sort of a halfway measure that can include the GPL, but it's a bit more loose, fast and loose as far as as long as it's open source and as long as it includes, well, the website has a description of how they define open source. Bruce Perens, I guess, had previously been involved with the Debian organization. He'd written their social contract and created, I think, some of their package selection system, a few other things, and eventually moved on from Debian because I think their adherence to these strict free software guidelines was a little stifling to him. Curiously enough, this Institute for Software Choice exists in opposition to the open source movement, and at different points he's taken the position that open source software should be required. I think in the march he participated in San Francisco, at the San Francisco City Hall, after he left his job as a consultant at Hewlett-Packard, I think he was quoted as saying
he's
that...
He's not still working with Hewlett-Packard anymore?
Oh, no, he left them, I guess, near last fall. He had some kind of falling out about his advocacy. My impression is that he kind of goes back and forth between being a bit more hardline about it, thinking or suggesting that these things are necessary and required, to being conciliatory. So it's difficult to get a bead on exactly where he stands on these issues. His reputation and the interviews I've seen of him, his approach to dealing with these political issues is kind of pleasant. He seems like a very nice guy, and he wants to appeal to people's better natures. He's from Long Island, but he moved to California, and he's been there for a while. And
that's quite a combination.
Yeah, and I think that suits him. He enjoys a certain appeal to people's better nature. You know, have some kind of principle, but be willing to bend a little. I can't say for sure, but I've seen interviews and articles and postings he's put on weblogs that suggest, you know, he's running a range of different points of view. And the reason I bring him up is he's a member of the cyber policy, security policy, CSPSQRYI, Tony Stanko, George Washington University organization. He was hired as some kind of a security researcher. And as such, he is the person bringing the OS to eGovOS. He's the person who adds legitimacy to this event as an open source event because he's a board member of the open source initiative. Now, when this conference was announced, or not when it was announced, but sometime later, when in a stealth mode, the shared source speaker and the software choice speaker were added to the lineup, that's when David Sugar brought it to the attention of the NYLXS mailing list, and that's when it started the flame war Ruben spoke of, where basically people were wondering, what are they doing there? Why has this happened? Who invited them? You know, who is this Tony Stanko fellow? Why is Bruce Perens a member of this organization? Why hasn't he spoken up and said, you know, these people really have nothing to do with open source. Shared source is not open source, not even close. And in fact, it's
not even open source. And
exactly.
It doesn't qualify as anything remotely what would be free software.
I've heard it described as a poison pill, where essentially, due to the non-compete clauses and non-disclosure agreements, if you are exposed to it even by accident, you can't make anything remotely resembling the software that you shared. You know, for God knows how long. I mean, you're basically crippling yourself by exposing yourself to it. And the software choice people, their point of view is clear. Open source should not be required in public organizations and government. Open source is not good, to oversimplify it. I mean, there's nothing they can say that's going to surprise anybody. And if this Jason Matuso fellow, who represents Microsoft's Shared Source Initiative, has something interesting to say, that would be surprising, you know. But for the most part, it's you can make a good guess if you've been paying attention to what's been going on in the development software industry, what he might say. Basically, the very presence of these two groups is harmful in a variety of ways. I got involved with this debate because the reaction I was seeing to the questions being raised were confusing.
They were confusing isn't the word for it. I mean, I've gotten used to this kind of response from people. It's when things are as you know, the mythology, the Jewish mythology of the Yetzer Hara, which is we don't really believe in so much as of a devil as we believe in people's evil incarnation, in which there might be some spiritual unifying force which is encourages. And we describe it as a fly. You shoo it away and it comes back. And you shoo it away and it comes back. And you shoo it away and it comes back. And this is very much seems to be the case with the responses that you see from these, especially from that one mailing list in Washington. The mailing list in Washington seems to be populated
Virginia.
Yeah, Northern Virginia and the D.C. Log. Both of these organizations, they seem to be popular with the most...
well, there's a cultural
I'm trying to
difference.
Use a word here that's not completely insulting to the entire, you know, Washington, D.C. area users groups, and I'm sure that it would be fair to say that I'm sure they have a lot of fine and qualified people there and politically astute individuals in there, but it seems that that organization is always about compromise. If I recommend to you that we need to have a communist government and round up all of the Arabs right now and get rid of them and shoot them in a basement, because after all,
are beholden to religion that has attacked America, and we need to establish a communist government now in order to rectify the economy. There would be, in out of the Nova Log, I'm sure, half of people saying, well, let's negotiate about this.
How about
this.
A socialist government?
No.
How about
no,
Arabs from this country, but not from this country?
That's
part of the D.C. culture, it's Northern Virginia, Southern America.
If they would come back and they would say, nobody would come back. If you came back on that mailing list and said, what are you talking about, setting up a communist government? That would be a violation of the civil rights, and it would take away property rights, and it's just unethical, and grounding up people and shooting them in the basement because of their ethnicity is just unbelievable. You can't do that. But that would be the normal response by, people with any type of morality. But in Washington, that Nova Log, for some reason, it seems that the response overwhelmingly over there would be, well, maybe you don't have to round them all up. Maybe just half of them, randomly on the street. And we don't have to have a communist system, but we should have a communist state. We can take Nebraska, and we can turn it into a communist state as an experiment. And we'll see how it goes.
Right, compromise. Well, consider Tony Stanko's work with the Free Software Foundation, where you were describing sitting with Dr. Stallman while he was communicating with him about compromising on digital rights. I mean, essentially, these are products of that D.C. Nova culture, where it isn't about absolutes. It's all about expediency, about getting things done, getting what you need, making a deal here. It's very distasteful.
Don't rock
it's not
horse.
Principled.
Don't rock the cart. If you rock the cart in D.C., then you'll be ostracized so fast. Everybody
exactly, unless you've got a big constituency behind you, unless you can bring something to the table that makes you untouchable.
Everybody's got to be on the inside track. Well, I got news for the guys from Washington. I don't live there, thank God.
Well,
I live in Brooklyn.
However, that is where these decisions are made. I mean, there has to be some way to approach them that will get what you want accomplished without compromising.
There is some decisions are made in D.C. Most of all, the power of the inner circle in Washington goes up exponentially with the apathy of the people that don't live in Washington. And
that's true.
That's the problem in a nutshell.
Well, hell, even if you're a short distance away, it's still like a kind of a psychic wall around the place.
And these people have no idea about real political tactics because they don't really apply politics. What they do is they apply negotiations. And politics is a different thing. Politics is you have your guy, and you want to get your guy in because he has ideas or he represents something that you want. And the opposition has got a different guy. And you don't want that guy to be involved in any way, shape, or form with the stuff that you're trying to get. And you're in a direct 50, or you're in a direct binary relationship with the opposition. You're either going to win or they're going to lose. Now, this type of politics is the politics that happens all the time in democracy, except in Washington. Because in Washington, they don't have any representation. So,
well, it's happening now, actually, for the first time with the Democratic senators trying to block judiciary candidates. They're actually starting to have filibusters.
Right, and
make the Republicans call cloture.
Then there's a question by the Republicans if it's appropriate or not.
Yeah, well, if that's the way it works.
It's appropriate if it's in the Constitution that the Senate has such a right, then it's appropriate, and it's really that simple.
As far as the issue of this conference is concerned, one of the problems is
one of the immediate reactions
that we're getting this fly you described is that I've heard the criticism of programmers in general as being easily hypnotized by details because professionally they have to pay attention to such small, subtle differences and changes. They sometimes miss the big picture. And in this case, the arguments that we were seeing were, great, representatives from Microsoft at an open source event. I can't wait to take them on. I can't wait to challenge them.
Right.
And they were completely missing the point.
Which gets us to the point after discussing this for a little bit of time. Why is the reason that NYLXS is so outraged by the conditions that we're looking at this point with the situation with the eGovOS? It's three problems that we feel that have steamrolled to the point now where the organizations that are representing free software or even quote-unquote open source software need to start taking a stand about certain things, and it just so happens that eGovOS happened to fall on the radar at the right moment.
Well, that brings up another issue, too. A lot of people were claiming censorship, like how dare, and Tony Stanko himself said this in reaction, how dare you?
Before we go there, we'll work out those arguments, but let's look at what our objections are first. The first problem is this event was described as an event which was supposed to allow
for people who have developed and to work with free software to present their goods and services and their abilities to not only the federal government, that is the U.S. federal government, but also the local governments and international governments, and to make their presentations, both their moralistic presentations and their actual applications and services that they can provide. Now, this is very important. In and of itself, this is great work because, frankly, especially in a time of a recession, our people have families, children that they need to educate, mortgages, houses, and they work really hard and they deserve an opportunity to be treated as equals and to be allowed to step up to the competition and be able to compete on an equal footing with all the other vendors that are out there for their software. And in fact, as a secondary issue, there is moralistic reasons to say that perhaps they should be allowed to have a heads up or have a ground up for a variety of technical and moralistic and legal reasons above proprietary systems. That's the first problem. All right. Now, being that most of this conference is basically dedicated to this discussion, except for this small sliver with Microsoft, you would say, okay, no harm, no damage. But the problem became greater than that because this is not just this conference. There's other conferences also. David Sugar was invited to go to this conference. He has a product which is just outstanding. He has the Bayonne telephony system, which with free software allows people to develop telephone systems that are infinitely flexible and infinitely dynamic on a variety of hardware. David is just a wizard programmer. He has four lovely children and a lovely wife by the name of Louise, and he's got a mortgage and so on. And at the Linux World Expo in New York, they came in second prize to Microsoft for an integration product.
Best interoperability.
Now, the product that Microsoft, quote-unquote, won this prize on, supposedly by a conference of open-source individuals, all right, was a product that only Microsoft could write because it worked on their operating system and required to have detailed knowledge of their system.
Microsoft Unixware.
Right? Now, what this meant to Dave, this meant two things. Microsoft won this competition based on unfair practices and non-competitive behavior. That's number one. Number two is that David really needed the publicity from this award in order to move his economic conditions forward and to work with his company. And David happens to be a member of both NYLXS and of the Free Software Chamber of Commerce. Now, when David brought this to me, I said, whoa, this is like a repeat of what we saw when he brought what happened with the first he brought to me the problem of the first place award when we at the Linux World Expo, and then when we discussed it at the dinner with Don Marty and Richard Stallman. And then, in fact, there were two issues, very interesting, the two issues, one we're not going to tackle tonight that we basically discussed at the dinner secondary to the Linux World Expo. One was the attempts by SCO to say that they're going to put their private patented systems up on top of Linux and improve Linux, which was a great problem. And then the rumors had filtered out.
Which they're suing IBM for right now.
Yes, the rumors had filtered out at that point that they were going to sue or try to sue other Linux vendors for these patents.
To leverage their intellectual property.
At that particular point, that was one thing that happened. Now, I'm just going to leave that out there because people can look at what's been happening in the last week with IBM and SCO. But the other thing that we were talking about was the problem with the Microsoft winning this award. There's no way that Microsoft should have been allowed to win this award.
It's troubling. It's apparent that the people behind this conference, a payoff and also a sort of a clubbiness, a sort of old boy thing where they think it would be cute
and a friendly gesture to get in the back room
and go, hey, why don't we give this to Microsoft?
I wish it was an old boy network. If it was an old boy network, then Microsoft would not have gotten in. Unfortunately, you know, they're so busy about worrying about feeling to be fair, but that they are not capable of understanding when they're actually shooting themselves in the foot. And they think it's a game, and it's not a damn game.
Well, these are businesses, though. People these are like Red Hat and SUSE.
People live and die. Their mental health, their social health, the welfare of the children depends on their ability to compete fairly in the market, their goods and services. All right. So this was at Linux World Expo. When it came up that David told me, okay, I'm not going to the eGovOS conference, then this was...
you know, it's just snapped in the back of my mind, and I said, no more. All right? This idea that we're just going to roll out the red carpet for a company that has been non-competitive, anti-competitive, been in the court twice, lost two antitrust suits for non-competitive behavior, has been known to destroy, purposely try to go out and destroy many companies, Borland, Netscape, and there's a whole variety of Windows-based companies that they have tried to eat up or destroy, all right, in order to stifle out the competition, that has been involved in the Windows Refund Day thing now for 2 years, ongoing, that now we're just pulling out the table chair for them, and people are saying, no, why is this not like IBM or SGI? Well, there's a big reason why. Let me explain it to you, because evidently some people are listening and just don't seem to catch the idea. I'm sure that they have the intelligence to understand it, and it's just my inability to actually explain it well. That's the problem. A company that has a long history of being anti-competitive and using its monopoly power to destroy other companies, all right, is a bad company, and it's evil. It is the antithesis and the absolute oppositeness of what free software is about, which is creating a condition where people can fairly compete and learn from each other, and that we can all rise as the proverbial, as the tide rises, all the boats rise with it, right? And by enabling people, Microsoft's conditions and their purpose has been, from the start and until today, to disable and to enslave as many people as they can.
To embrace and extend.
Well, they call it embrace and extend, but I call it just slavery. It's called shackle and drag. Okay?
And slave.
Right? This is enslaving the user. Microsoft's purpose has been
to ensnare and enslave
the user. Right. Now, Microsoft's not alone in this. Other companies have tried to do things like this previously also. Sun has tried to do it, and IBM has done it to try to do it. So why would we allow, let's say, Sun to be here and IBM to be here, but Microsoft not to be? Well, for this reason. IBM and Sun, despite their past problems and the current problems, I might add, have come to the free software movement in an open fashion and have tried to make contributions and to do synergy as they see fit. Which doesn't mean that they do what we want them to do, or that they do everything ethically or correctly, but they have made significant contributions to the community.
Well, they've opened up source code.
They've opened up source code.
Participated in open source.
And they've given things under the GPL. I mean, Sun basically launched the OpenOffice.org product, which with the being unshackled from the proprietary software has now developed into, in a very short time, into an extremely usable piece of product. They have at least been willing to share Java with people, although I will go say that their behavior on that can be a lot better.
Well, there are suggestions that they're going to LGPL or open up the...
Well, it would be good to see that, but clearly they have not looked at the community as being their absolute brutal enemy. And IBM, you know, IBM has worked with the mainframe, has done some kernel hacking for us, and has supported people and actually hired people in the free software movement in their advocacy roles. So all we can say is that while these companies are not by any means everything that we want, they have brought something to the table that has earned them a right to speak. Microsoft has not.
Well, Microsoft has a culture of competition. The whole anti-competitive, antitrust thing is a result of that, you know, basically running roughshod over their opponents. And their competition right now is open source, is free software. And it's the brick wall they've run up against because it's the one competition they can't really destroy.
They can't just buy it out.
It's like, you know,
actually they can
to beat
buy
up
it
on
out.
Water.
I hate to give them some ideas. They can actually do some things that can damage the community very rapidly.
Hey, they could buy SCO.
They could
SCO.
They can buy SCO. Anybody can buy SCO right now. But I can buy SCO. You want SCO? Yeah, I'll give it to you. $5.
And the things that are going on with this conference.
No, there's a bigger thing that Microsoft could do. I mean, if they really wanted to attack the open source community, they can come up with their own distribution and fork it so badly that nobody else can keep up and create a problem with marketing.
Oh, yeah.
And that would be another problem. Let's not give them any ideas. Anyway, the bottom line, though, but that's not in itself, okay, all of this is not really a problem yet. The real problem, though, is that if it's even 5 or 10 minutes that they're taking on time, they're going to first get all the press, all right, because they're press hounds. And it's much more nicer to give a report about how Microsoft came to this eGovOS and how they were contributing to the free software movement, which they're not, all right, and then pretend as if something's happening. Wherever Microsoft goes, they're the 300-pound gorilla. They're going to get the press. We need our people to get the press. exactly. Not Microsoft's.
The recent Australian,
and they need it because of money.
Of that.
It all comes down to money. We deserve the money. We deserve the contracts. They don't. And there's no way they should be allowed to apply their publicity engine on our conference. Is now, and this gets back to the problem with David Sugar. David Sugar supports the free software community. He's given lectures for NYLXS. He's been at business demos with us where we've demonstrated to the public in Manhattan and in Queens products. He has given his time, he's taught, and he's lectured, and he is just a full-blown member of NYLXS and the Free Software Foundation and the free software community in general. And David deserves not to be impeded by a company that is the antithesis of what David represents and what he's trying to sell. David deserves a fair share to sell his wares in a conference which is designed so that he can sell his wares without being obstructed by the competition, which has got no moral standing of being there whatsoever. And the bottom line is that everybody knows this. Everybody knows this.
Well,
and when the investigation got done as to how it is that Microsoft got into this conference, it came down from George Washington University, and they leaned on Tony Stanko. Tony Stanko's more interested in his own self than he is about actually promoting the people
see,
that actually do
thing.
NYLXS.
There's
and there's a payoff
here.
Involved. There's
well,
a payoff.
Possibly, not necessarily directly. Okay, there's some
not necessarily money.
Here. And there's a larger issue as well, although the issue of somebody being able to support themselves and their work in open source is extremely important. There are a number of other things going on. I mean, the argument about censorship of Microsoft completely misses the point. If this is an open source advocacy event, then Microsoft has no place there. So you're not actually censoring anybody. I mean, if you're having a conference specifically to sell, you know, screwdrivers and somebody wants to show up and sell hammers, and you say, no, this is a screwdrivers conference, so you're not censoring anybody. That's kind of beside the point. It isn't a question of censorship. The other issue is about competition. Well, let them show up and let them speak, and then we'll shoot them down. This sort of frustrated desire to compete on the part of a lot of developers and programmers who, I guess, you know, because Mathletes wasn't gratifying enough for whatever they did back in high school that wasn't the basketball team, now they want to slug it out with some guy from Microsoft. That's an error for a number of reasons. One is, first of all, they weren't necessarily going to be able to ask any questions. It was only after making some noise on the mailing list that Bruce Perens even suggested, well, hey, maybe I'll let you do a few minutes of Q&A. The simple fact was this guy was going to show up and talk and leave. And that, of course, brings up the point of confusing the issue. Microsoft shows up and all of a sudden it's all about them. There was the Australian eGov conference, and some reports about that were that a lot of people were really happy because Microsoft was there. They're going, oh, it wasn't an evangelical type of thing. It wasn't a religious thing. It was really nice and mellow. Well, the Australian government is actually directly involved in that one. It's not being put on by an open source group, and they wanted these groups to be there, like Microsoft in addition to IBM, and they were making deals that were pretty transparent, and the people who showed up at that were pleased because they didn't want to learn about open source. They wanted to have, you know, lunch on so-and-so and an afternoon out of the office, and it was like totally missing the point. The ambiguity comes in because, is this an advocacy event? And it's fair to conclude that it is, but they've written it up. This lawyer, Tony Stanko, has basically put together his institute and this conference to look like an advocacy event. As Richard Stallman points out, anybody who investigates this thing is going to think it's an open source and government advocacy event, never mind that you've written a couple of little words here and there that in fact give you a way out. You know, a clever use of terms to say, oh, and by the way, it's not an advocacy event, so we can invite whoever we want. You know, that's being clever. But they're nonetheless representing it as that.
If it's not an advocacy event, then what is the point to the event?
Well,
the event
is
to discuss open source, quote-unquote, open source software with the government and with other governments. So if that's not an advocacy event,
well,
then
like
what's
you said,
the point of it?
The point of the event is to get Tony Stanko and his Cyber Policy Institute and George Washington University a higher profile on technology issues in the rarefied air, the bubble of Washington, D.C. I mean, essentially, he is playing for his, it's not necessarily that he's getting a literal payoff. He's playing by a different set of rules. He's playing by the DC culture of compromise for your own best interest 2 years down the road. Someone else will owe you a favor. I think that's fair to assume. And this whole thing is for the benefit of the people involved more than open source. And my question was, well, this seems kind of apparent. Why is Bruce Perens allowing himself to be attached to it? Well, he didn't actually address that. I think he got scared off of the dialogue early on and isn't really inclined to say anything about it, but he
besides
must be
that,
getting something out of it.
He's in Holland advocating right. the use of free software.
Right, and he's back in the country now and talking about the SEO lawsuit, so he's around. But he's a conciliatory fellow. He's got his own agenda. The open source movement in and of itself is a watered-down version of the free software movement. It's designed to appeal to certain people who would otherwise be intimidated by the, you know, the stronger principles of free software.
Let me just say something about the censorship issue. For those who think that, you know, there's a censorship problem that we can't, you know, that refusing to have Microsoft at the table is some form of censorship, I would like to say to you all, I agree. And every single Microsoft commercial that there is that goes out and they go over and they have their Microsoft commercial where they don't allow us equal time paid for by Microsoft and national television to promote free software, it's a censorship issue, and we've got to bring that issue to Microsoft.
Oh, sure.
It's
well,
time for Microsoft.
All the meetings they
Microsoft
have with
absolutely
officials.
Has to give us equal time in every one of the commercials. It's censorship otherwise. If they don't give us a chance to speak on national television and run around commercials paid before by them, then by all means, this is censorship.
Well,
and
I don't have
I
their
can't,
deep pockets.
Yeah, we can't continue with this. Like this, we have to prevent the censorship of Microsoft.
Well, the
on
simple
the community.
Fact of the matter is that they have conferences and private meetings with government officials all the time. In fact, they had a conference specifically for government representatives that no member of any free software or open source movement was invited to. They were speaking to government officials, and in it, Bill Gates himself delivered a speech in which he criticized open source and GPL'd software. And we weren't there. No one was allowed to go there. There was no invitation. They did have some kind of insider type conference that they invited someone from Free Software. Who was it? Someone, one of the lawyers spoke there about the GPL. And that was kind of like a dog and pony show. Like, hey, look, here's a member of the opposition. He's going to get up and tap dance for you. Look how fair we are. Let's let him talk and then we laugh politely when he gets off. Mm-hmm. You know, but regardless of that, that's not even really the issue. And the poor people who get all excited about winning an argument with Microsoft,
there's
that's
no
just
point to win
sad.
A freaking argument. Who
the
cares about the argument?
The very fact that they're there and lose the argument is lost on people. All people hear is they were there.
Who cares
shared
about winning an argument?
Must be
you never win anything by
source.
Winning an argument. Who says that anything is ever settled either politically or in business on the basis of an argument? If we were talking about an argument, then there would be no Microsoft software because it's all insecure, buggy, and below standard. So obviously,
right. Bill
there's
Gates
nothing
himself
to
said to Steve Jobs that it isn't about making the better software. It's
about making
marketing.
More of it.
Yeah, it's about
you know, it's like
it
the old
there.
Thing of World War II where they said, well, what, you know, we could have won World War II not dropping bombs in Hamburg. We could just drop Buicks because we just dropped so many of them.
Two tons of metal at a time.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, this is it. This is virtually the same, the same.
Well, when you get these
issue.
Arguments out of the way, what you're left with is that something that appears to be an open source and government advocacy conference that involves representatives of state, federal, municipal, American governments, European governments, and businesses who are going to talk about what they've done with open source software, what they offer in terms of government open source software, that it's in fact apparently not an advocacy event. Apparently it's a way for this institute, the people behind it, and the university that sponsors them to get attention and confuse the issue and make some friends at Microsoft at the same time. I mean, one of the rebuttals Tony gave...
He
just kicked us off the air.
I didn't do anything. Sorry, I didn't do anything.
The XMMS?
I'm not even on this machine.
Sorry about that. Well, back
so
to the topic at hand. What the problem is that it's apparently in the interests of the organization that's putting on the conference. And the bigger issue that I wanted to bring up, in addition to the economic impact it has on free software developers, is the one about accountability. Free software has the Free Software Foundation. Open source has the Open Source Initiative, which is kind of a weak body that has more of a public statement than an actual presence. It seems to kind of be a middle-of-the-road sort of thing, but it does what it wants to do. It gets people to consider the issue of open source, and Bruce Perens gets to travel around and put together things that draw attention to these issues, so that's all well and good. But who is accountable? Who can say, hey, this guy is using this for his own political advantage? What organization,
which, by the way, I'm not necessarily against him using something for his political advantage, as long as it coincides with the needs of the community.
Right. It's not about being exclusive. It's about, you know, being true to the actual principles involved. You know, it's like, it's perfectly fine for me to get up and put together a conference, just as long as I am representing something accurately. If I say I'm going to have an open source conference, I can pretend it's advocacy and then actually invite proprietary software vendors who get up and say, that stuff is sucks. What you really want is a Microsoft GovControl version 4. You know, that's like those terrible things they would have at college campuses where, you know, Christian evangelists would show up and they'd say, hey, come on, everybody, there's a free movie at the Student Commons about rock and roll. And you show up and they lock the door and it's like some movie about how rock and roll is evil and decadent and sinful and will make you become a homosexual junkie, and then they lecture you for a while. It's like,
yeah,
you can do
that.
Will
make you a homosexual junkie?
Well, I did go to one, and they had this wonderful photograph of Lou Reed and David Bowie open-mouth kissing, and would look like Tompkins Park. So I wanted that for a poster, but that's about all I remember of it. And they were gay junkies at one time, although they claim to not be anymore. But that aside, there's economic damage. There's benefiting the enemy, so to speak, just by confusing the issue. There's people playing for their own personal gain, you know, playing fast and loose for their own political careers. And I saw entirely too many people take up the side that, oh, this is censorship, which is a ridiculous, misplaced argument, or, oh, this is a great opportunity to beat up on these people, which is a naive and foolish argument. I mean, consider Microsoft's history in dealing with, for example, the GPL. They realize that their tactics aren't working, so if you start to think in their terms, doesn't it make sense that all of a sudden they want to confuse the issue and send this Jason Matuso fellow everywhere the words open source appear? So he'll be standing next to somebody holding a sign that says shared source. I mean, just doesn't that fact alone serve their purpose? Even if it's just a holding pattern while they're trying to figure out the best way to crush free and open software, it still works to their advantage. And this foolish professional lawyer, Tony Stanko fellow, is probably going to be dumped on the side of the road at some point while thinking he's being clever. But it's not out of line to assume that his motivation is poor. The one thing that bothers me about this dialogue early on was that it got kind of inflammatory to the point where some people bailed out of it. I would really have liked to have heard Bruce Perens defend this, but I think he got a little bit frightened by some of the passion, since he's now a very easygoing Silicon Valley guy, and used that as an excuse to not be accountable. And accountability is one of the big issues.
Well, accountability is the issue, and that's the issue that we're going to be tackling, and that's why we're going down there. It's time for us to tell that anybody who's going to step forward and say that we represent free software or open source software, that they're going to have to start being accountable. And one of the things that they're going to have to start being accountable is not giving away our goods. If we are working in order to brand free software as a positive thing for the government, then they cannot be just handing off it to Microsoft so Microsoft can brand things. Now, I'll tell you something about politics. If you say something in politics and marketing enough times, it's true. All right? And therefore, Jack Valenti will say that the VCR was to young women as the Boston Strangler, or is to movies as the Boston Strangler is to women in Boston. And he will say it a million times. right? They will go over and they will say that the public's right to use their media that they purchase as they see fit is a violation of our property rights, and they're stealing from us. And they will say it over and over and over and over and over again. And this is Microsoft's thing. They want to get there and they want to say shared source, open source, shared source, over and over again until what's not true is true in the public's mind. This cannot be allowed to happen. It cannot be allowed to happen, and it will not happen under my nose if I can permit it not to happen.
It's changing the rules of the argument just by making people forget what the argument was originally about.
People don't care about the argument. All they care is about the people. Everybody who wants to sell a product has to get a brand name. All right. The reason when commercials first came out on television, they thought they had to be 2 minutes long in order to be able to be unique and identify themselves. And then they learned, no, it's better if they're 30 seconds long. Now they think they're better off at 15 seconds. 15 seconds gives them enough chance to say, you can have a Coke and a smile. All right. And everybody thinks that they're smiling if they're drinking Coke. The ability to get a message repeatedly out at the public is the most important and critical part of both politics, marketing, and business.
But unfortunately,
and that's what Microsoft wants to do. Hang on a second.
Consider that this now, is political culture.
Now, hang on.
I mean, we're talking about D.C.
So the question is, I don't care about D.C., frankly. Now, the problem that we have is that we have people that are supposed to be responsible to us. Now, are they promoting us by giving us our one line that the government can get? I mean, people are going to walk into this thing. They're going to be lulled to sleep by these technical discussions, all right? Literally, their eyes are just going to roll back, and they're going to fall asleep. Are we going to be able to get them again to be able to walk out, those people that, who are our potential clients, to walk out with one line or one message that they're going to walk out and say, even if it's open source is good, shared source bad, you know? Or are they going to say, if it's either free software or in slavery, whatever it is, are these people actually being responsible to us in order to market for us? And the answer to that is
no. But they
and
can argue that they don't have to be.
They can argue that all they want, and we're going to be there to start making them, putting their feet to the fire. We're going to start making these so-called advocates that are supposedly representing us to start to represent us properly. If you want to get up there, people like Tony Stanko want to go up there and say, well, I'm representing the open source movement. The hell with that, you are. All right, you can't tell me
he's not.
You can't tell me that you're representing the open source movement, and then at the same time you're running this conference and you're giving Microsoft a free pass to get their word out. This is bullshit. We're not going to put on it, and we're not going to put up with it anymore. And in that regard, we're going down there. We've got 8 or 9 people at this point signed up. We're going down there dressed as Revolutionary War soldiers. We have pulled up a couple of things. We're going to have to meet next week in order to make this a little better. But here's some of the ideas that we've come up with so far. We're coming up with posters that are going to say things like, paraphrasing Ben Franklin, when good men do nothing, evil men make deals with Microsoft. All right? Well, how about this one? We find these truths self-evident. Tony Stanko sold us out. Okay? We've got some other ones.
Hear ye, hear ye.
That we're working on. Those are the two that we're going to be functioning on at this point. Now, Richard Stallman has gone around and said, oh, everybody's going to say GNU Linux, GNU Linux, GNU Linux. Now, I appreciate Richard's position on this because his feeling is that people have sold him out. Well, I don't necessarily agree with everything Richard does or say, but I will say this. The time has come for the bell to ring. And it comes clearly that it's time for these people to stop dancing on the head of a pin. Either they're for us or they're against us, right? Either they're going to make the money or they're going to help us make money, and they're going to help us using ethical means of competition, or they're going to help us protect digital rights and freedoms and the Fourth and the Fifth Amendments of the copyright or of the Constitution and against copyright infringement, all right, which is the infringement of copyright on the public, all right? Or they're not going to. If they're not going to, we're going to start tossing them out. And we're going to make it so clear to them, we're going to make it so difficult for them in the future to just run up the pole and say, I represent the free software movement or the open source movement, and I do so because I have started this eGov thing. We're going to be on their tails, and we're going to say, no, you sold us out. And we're going to be there at their meetings. We're going to be there in their lugs. We're going to be there in their neighborhoods. We're going to just start being there.
Starting a little stalky there.
What
do you say to people
when
who
you
say
are
that's
a
not
public,
the way it's
when you
done.
Are a public figure, or you're presenting yourself as a public figure, you've opened yourself up to criticism, and what would be considered stalking normally is not stalking under these conditions. Now, what are you going to say to people who say that...
That's not how it's done.
That's not
like
how it's
for
done.
For example, your Bruce Perens or Tony Stanko will say, well, that's not how things are done in D.C. Or this balance act, where this congresswoman from California is trying repeatedly to get these measures through the House of Representatives to try and restore some digital rights to consumers. And it's all halfway. They're not taking your point of view, or even if they have your point of view that... these are stealing consumers' rights outright and there should be no compromise. They're from the point of view of, you know, but here I am in this system and, you know, what do you tell people who say, well, that's not the way it's done. You have to do these half measures. You have to make these backroom deals. You have to trade off a little bit of DRM on that, but we'll let you
that's
boot
what,
Linux.
That's like that Longman thing that's now making the rounds. People going around a balanced bill.
Right.
That bill is not balanced. That bill will make it illegal to run your media on free software. It's a violation of your basic Fifth and Fourth Amendment rights. As far as what to say about these people, don't say anything to them. They are unimportant. Nothing ever gets done by getting into a hot-edge debate with a bunch of people like that. We are in the middle. We are central. We are mom, pop, apple pie, kids, schools. Everything that's good in America, that's what we represent. And these other people, they are the evil politicians who are willing to sell your soul in order for their own personal engagement and empowerment. All right?
Okay.
But we are the good middle class people, the middle of the road, people who want nothing more from our government other than reasonable policy that respects our basic human rights.
So your answer is a populist uprising against the forces that would steal our rights from us. Fair enough.
You have to be, as was it Churchill said that democracy always has to be vigilant? I forgot the exact phrase that he made.
Yeah, something to that effect,
but
yeah.
This we have to do, and we have to commit ourselves to it. If we don't, we're going to starve. And starving is bad. All right. Now, with that being said, unless you have something else to add to it.
No, that should do it.
Okay. This has been a little bit intense, this thing, a little bit more intense than the last one. I just want to say one more time that this show has been brought to you by the Free Software Chamber of Commerce, who is our sole and only sponsor. If you have free software needs for anything from mainframes to Beowulf clusters to setting up desktops, check out NYLX's free Software Chamber of Commerce and put our good people to use. In fact, this video streaming, as haphazard as it's been done tonight, which is my fault, not the fault of anybody else. The technical crew was responsible for this media stream. So, please, if you are looking at building a business or for your business needs, look at the Free Software Chamber of Commerce. Also, for your educational needs, please look at the Free Software Institute. We have a lovely program that's just dynamite. I can't even say enough good things about it. And I'm happy to say that we're going to be having a very great election coming up, coming in April. And the way we've been arguing and fighting lately within the organization, this sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. Democracy in action, it's a unique thing. Anybody who ever wants to see it should come to one of the NYLXS board meetings when we have an important issue on the table, because it will show you exactly how democracy works, because people just don't seem to understand it, especially people in Washington. And goodbye, and have a great week. Dun 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 dun